Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week I have some NAMI presidents here. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We're going to talk about NAMI today. If you want to join us, Kate Brister, the Master Gardener Extraordinaire, is on the hotline out in the foyer. You can give us a call here at 503-325-0010. My guests are Barbara Bate, the board president of NAMI Washington, and Kate Erskine, the Pacific County NAMI president. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Okay, so let's start with what's NAMI. Barbara, you want to start and tell us how it started?
Okay. NAMI started in 1979 as the NAMI, as the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. And the people who started it in places like Seattle, Wisconsin, and Maryland were parents of adults with predominantly schizophrenia. And when many of the psychiatric hospitals closed, there weren't community supports. And these parents said, we want better treatment and help. So it started with parents, what are often called NAMI mommies, and over the years has grown to involve more people and more directions. And 5 years ago was changed to be called the National Alliance on Mental Illness because we wanted not to assume that mentally ill is someone's total identity. Mm-hmm. We don't say she's a cancer or she's a heart.
Right.
So it's on mental illness.
So it's really recognizing that we are multifaceted.
Right. And that the brain is central to the whole body and not, we don't want to connect, don't want to disconnect it from everything else.
Right. Well, and of course, we have such a hard time with that as a culture.
Yes.
We take a real split view of ourselves.
Right.
Right.
That I think that's part of the problem.
Yes, it is.
We don't realize that we're one thing. People will say, you know, they have a problem with their hand, but they don't realize it maybe it's coming from their neck.
Right, right. And I know you, in the field of medicine that you're involved in, you know that in chiropractic, it's all of the body together, the bones, the muscles, the nerves, the whole being. And really, that's what researchers are more and more understanding. That the brain is central and the brain is connected to everything else.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you can follow a nerve cell to pretty well, you know, to the extent of your extremity
right.
from the brain.
Right.
And we're certainly all connected. But, you know, there's another thing. Research is showing that the brain is regenerative. And, you know, when I was in school in the 70s and even up until the 2000s, it was really the prevailing thought was that the brain cannot heal, cannot change. And we know now that isn't true.
That's right.
In the right conditions, the brain will change and heal and become more functional in every way.
Right. And throughout life, in older people, when they're learning, when they're growing, when they're social with others, that will grow. And some of the most recent research into the brain and into treatments has been showing that if a person gets the right medicine for that brain, that in fact new cells grow with the right medicine and the right overall support. That's just awesome, wonderful, wonderful work, because it's the whole being that will grow and improve.
Certainly, yes, certainly when you have right treatment. There's also ample evidence that exercise makes the brain develop better, and certainly good nutrition is another factor in it. So let's talk about how you two came to this. Were you one of those parents or
Kat? Let Kat start.
Actually, I'd heard of NAMI for a long time and had wanted to go to a NAMI meeting, and I met Barb at a Thanksgiving dinner on the peninsula and found out that she was part of NAMI, and she offered me a ride to a meeting, and I said, oh, I'd love to go. And a couple of months later, I went to a meeting with Barb and ended up getting very involved in NAMI to the point that now I'm president of Pacific County.
Mm-hmm. And why?
And why?
What's your interest?
A lot of it is to educate the public about the fact that it is a whole body problem, that it's not just, you know, in your head or whatever, and to help break the stigma and the shame and the guilt involved.
And both of us experienced that shame and stigma early in life. I'll start. I was 3 years old when my mother disappeared right after my younger brother had been born. And my father and my grandmother didn't tell me where she was. And I actually thought perhaps she died, and they didn't want to tell me. She was in a psychiatric facility. We were in Cleveland, Ohio, and this was across the across Lake Erie in Ontario. And only afterwards, many years afterwards, did she tell me about getting treatment for postpartum depression. But there was so much shame and secrecy that no one wanted to talk about it. And my older brother had to leave college, Princeton, in fact, his last year, because of what was determined to be a psychiatric illness. And then for me, in my early 30s as a doctoral student, I was suicidal. And three friends got me help, both medical help and personal support. So I'm alive because despite all these emotional and psychiatric problems around me, I had people who cared about me to kind of get me across that hump. So NAMI, my understanding of NAMI came in the 2000s. I didn't know it existed till then, but the issues had been around since almost birth. And Kat, your story is
It started at birth. My father committed suicide when my mother was pregnant with me, and so he had suffered from depression, and I became depressed at about age 5, and when I was 7, I tried to kill myself, which opened my mother's eyes especially, and she got treatment for me, got me to a therapist immediately, and that, I still say that saved my life. And I saw that therapist for many years, and I've been in and out of therapy for most of my life, but I was treated for depression, and in my 30s, we discovered through the therapist I was seeing then that I was bipolar instead of just depressed. And there's different treatment for bipolar than depression. However, it took me 17 years to seek help, especially medically, for the bipolar because of shame and guilt and the stigma attached to bipolar.
So I think we should talk about the difference between those terms, those diagnoses, because I think that there's still a lot of misunderstanding. everyone thinks they're depressed in Clatsop County, I'd say. I mean, people use the term very casually.
Yes.
I expect people to be depressed when they lose a spouse, or, you know, they lose their job, they get a divorce, or whatever, those kinds of things. But those pass. And people are frequently put on medication during those times when I think it would be much more helpful for them to grieve and to be told this is normal. Mm-hmm. But a true depression is not situational.
That's right.
And it's right. But there, you can't take a blood test and say, aha, you're right, the depression test. There's no test. No. So there's a lot of human judgment. Mm-hmm. And so it's really easy to make a casual, if you have a 2-minute encounter with your doctor, mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. are you going to make a proper diagnosis?
Mm-hmm. One of the neat things that's happening currently is that there is, I just read about this a week ago, actually I think it was in this BP magazine, that there is a new 43-item survey or questionnaire mm-hmm. that can be used that can tease out some of the circumstances that differentiate from a situational depression and the ongoing whole body experience of being not able to think, not able to move. You don't care about food or other people or things that you have perhaps cared about before. Mm-hmm. And it can help differentiate between the bipolar experiences, which are, they're cyclical. And particularly, I was saying to you earlier that it can be harder to stay balanced in the spring, summer, and early fall, especially here in the coast, because it's harder to have enough and the right kind of sleep. It's harder to stay on balance with your own schedule and your own rhythm. So while we don't know a blood test yet, there are better and better ways of asking the right questions that can help bring this up.
Now, you mentioned this survey. Where could people find this survey?
I just read it in this magazine, and so I'm happy to follow up with anybody who wants to phone me and ask about it. There's also this BP, it's just literally BP magazine.
As in British Petroleum?
No, no, it's bipolar. I never hadn't even thought about the other option. This is a magazine that comes out quarterly. Uh-huh. And in fact, we at our NAMI Pacific Group get a bulk set of copies of this. But you also can, I think, go online to, I think it's www.bphope.com. And I don't know if it's org or com. I'll look while you're talking with Kat.
Okay. All right. And or we can come back to that. Why don't we take a break? When we come back, we'll talk more about mental illness. If you want to get in on the conversation, call us at 503-325-0010. You're listening to Your Health, and we're talking about NAMI. I'm with Barbara Bate and Kat Erskine. We'll be right back. If you're just joining us, you are listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and we're talking about NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I'm with Barbara Bate and Kat Erskine, and they are from Pacific County. And all right, now when we left off, you were talking about this magazine, BP, which doesn't have to do with the oil spill in the Gulf. No, but it means magazine bipolar. And on the cover of this issue, who do we have there? That looks like
Glenn
Glenn Close.
And Jessie Close.
Is that her daughter?
No, it's her sister. Glenn Close started last October a new group, and this is online as well, called Bring Change to, number two, mind.com. And it's a new effort nationally to counter stigma about mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And Glenn and her sister, Jessie, have become more active and vocal and visible about Jessie's experience with bipolar illness. And I don't know which version. There are several forms of bipolar illness. Most people do not have the extreme version, which is the mania going naked in the streets. That's what people read about in mm-hmm. newspaper articles, but it is not typically the experience of most people. So Glenn and Jessie started this, and at our state conference, we will have a mother and daughter who have experienced, through the daughter's bipolar illness, the experience of being family, trying to understand mental illness and recovery. So they will be at the Ellensburg.
Okay. So let's see. There's a conference, a NAMI conference. Is it the Washington State conference?
Right.
Okay. And that's in Ellensburg, Washington on August 13th and 14th. And are there like dorms? Is that on a university campus?
It is at the university. There are two dorms. There are actually two very nice dorms with elevators, and we're lucky to have a good facility and a wonderful food and very reasonably priced. As mm-hmm. you can imagine, it's university. Mm-hmm. So it starts 11 a.m. Friday the 13th and finishes with a banquet Saturday the 14th. Mm-hmm. And there is information about the full schedule of the conference is on our website, namiwa.org.
So that's
namiwa.org.
Great. So if people want to go to that, that would be good. One of the statistics that's in the NAMI literature is that one out of four households have a person with a mental health issue.
Right.
That's pretty staggering. I have a family of four.
Mm-hmm.
that means there's likely to be one, and there is one.
Well, when the image is that the only real mental illnesses are the extreme ones,
right.
Like
psychosis.
You know, right. Then we tend to say, oh, I'm not crazy. You know, I'm not one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, the brains of many people are affected by genetics, by early life experience, by various kinds
exposure to drugs and alcohol.
Yes, yes. And often
abuse.
People medicate themselves if they have a psychiatric, a brain, especially cycle issue or a thinking issue, then maybe marijuana or the right kind of alcohol or just something will ease their minds. But of course, it doesn't.
Well, you know, that's interesting because that would probably be a clue for a parent or a counselor or a friend that a child who has a really early tendency to, or whatever, you know, a teenager or even younger who wants to drink, who wants to use drugs, who wants to do risky behaviors that are medicating, that there may be something else,
right,
that they probably need some attention.
Right.
And instead of being grounded and spanking and whatever, you
right.
know, good, maybe they actually need to have a visit to somebody to get that looked at.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And we tend to dismiss all kinds of bad behaviors. I mean, not just that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the idea that it's the behavior that is the issue rather than what happened way upstream, you know, in the brains. And often people start to think, oh, there was Aunt Susie and there was my grandfather who was somewhere far away. And these history elements can help us understand mm-hmm. what kind of brain predispositions there are to issues.
You know, I wonder about that because I hear when I'm interviewing patients, you know, that my mother was depressed, my grandmother was, or, you know, there are psychiatric problems going back multiple generations in lines of women. And I wonder, you know, did a lot of these things start as postpartum depression that never got treated that get passed on to the next, you know, they're deficient, the kids are even more deficient, and it kind of cycles down, and we get a less and less functional adult as we go down the generations. I just...
Could be. Well, and Kat, you've experienced some generational issues as well.
Because my father was obviously depressed, and some of my aunts and uncles were depressed, but it was never really talked about. The Uncle Paul lived in a special home where they helped take care of him, but it wasn't said that he lived in a halfway house or anything like that. He was just out of the picture. And some of my cousins have bipolar, which we just found out in the last 5 years at a family reunion in talking that, oh, well, you know, this is me as well. And but we had never talked about it before.
So what do you think helps break that cycle of it's okay to say, I think I have a problem, or I definitely do have a problem, and it's not a heart problem.
Right.
It's a head problem.
And it's often it's a head and heart problem. There are actually the year that I learned about bipolar illness and depression and NAMI was when the pastor at the Grace River Church died of a heart attack the Sunday after Easter. And I met his widow, and she said he had had clinical depression for a long time. And that same year, the National Institute of Mental Health had a study of what's called the sad heart. The heart is 60% nerve tissue. And they began to realize that people who had not had heart preconditions as such, but it had long time brain psychiatric diminishing of their well-being, could have a heart attack that nobody could predict except if they understood the head and heart connection. So I'm glad you were asking about what can help, because our just being here with you in a program called To Your Health is a big thing for us. We both were saying as we drove over, even if we don't say the right things, the fact that we are two people in recovery. For me, it's 35 years ago that friends saved my life. And that we both get a chance now to share that we have medical illnesses. They are health conditions. They aren't our fault. They aren't our parents' fault. And that talking about them, like Glenn and Jesse Close are talking about them, means that more people can figure out what's going on, learn their family history, get health support, and also the things that you were talking about. Exercise helps a lot. Getting good regular sleep. Getting food, supplements.
Real food.
And flaxseed oil and vitamin B12. And there are things that particularly help with particular psychiatric medical illnesses. But we can't give or get help if we don't talk about it.
Right. Well, and I know, I'm sure that there are some families where it's still definitely not okay to talk about it.
Yes, I've never talked about it with my own family.
Really?
My brothers and sisters, right?
Wow. Are you the oldest?
No, I'm the youngest.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, it could have had a new, could have been a new dad. You can't assume.
Right. But, you know, I'm in my 60s, and I remember the C word. You know, people would say the C word instead of saying cancer. And think about where we are
well,
now.
Well, I was thinking the C word was crazy.
Well, that other, that, right. The other, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's another C word, right?
You know? And that keeps a lot of folks from getting, from just talking about it and getting help, because what if I'm crazy?
Well, you know, I have patients who have chronic pain that is not diagnosed by their doctor, and they, their doctor tells them that they're crazy because they have this pain, and that makes them crazy because they know what they feel, and they're just not getting the help they need. And I think that, well, we know that chronic pain changes the brain and can make you, crazy is not a word,
right,
but
right.
It doesn't mean anything, but it changes your brain, and it makes you not as functional as you would be if you got the help you needed. So I think a lot of times when people go for help, they go to the wrong place. Mm-hmm. But they think it's the right place. It's their doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's the therapist. And maybe the therapist is unhelpful. I had a psychiatrist tell me that it was impossible that my father molested me.
Oh, my.
That's what I said. You're fired.
Yeah, right.
That wasn't helpful.
No. And more doctors and nurse practitioners and others are coming to understand these things, mm-hmm. but not everybody does.
Right.
I just found this survey that I mentioned at the beginning.
Oh, good, good, good.
And it is actually from Mental Health America, which is a sister organization to NAMI. And it's a new online screening tool. And it's available, and this is the online information. It's available at mymoodmonitor.com. And it looks like it's mymoodmonitor.com. So anyone can go online and see it. And it especially can help if you're trying to figure out, is it anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is very widespread, not only in the military, or another treatable mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest...
They're all treatable.
Yes, they
are. I mean,
are.
They're all treatable, and and nobody needs to suffer.
That's right.
There is help out there. You just have to keep going until you find the help for you. And, you know, what helped your friend with what you think is the same thing, maybe you don't have the same thing. Because a lot of people will come to me and they say, well, my friend had the same backache. It's not the same problem. You're not the same you. You know, you've got all these other factors. So not necessarily that your friend took X medication that's going to help you. Mm-hmm. And just because the doctor likes to use certain medication doesn't mean it's the right one for you either.
Very true.
Right. And it can take a few years to get the combination of medications that will help you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I know people that have been on the right medication for years, and then suddenly their doctor comes across a new one and switches them, and it's awful.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they're
yes.
they're thrown backward a mile.
Right. Ah. Oh. Good.
Okay. There. We had a call from someone who's. Made lots of. Let's see. There's a book, My Stroke of Insight.
Oh, yes.
And this is from a counselor. And let's see.
Jill Bolte Taylor's book, My Stroke of Insight, is the story of her experience of a hemorrhagic stroke.
Oh, I heard a lecture by her.
Yes.
Oh, she's amazing. And this is a book about that.
Right.
Oh,
My Stroke of Insight. And she also in this, because I know her through NAMI, she talks about the right and left hemispheres, and that the right hemisphere, in her case, which was not in hemorrhage,
mm-hmm.
Is the one who that can be aware of the whole world and is more attuned to all of life. And so she experienced that hope while her left hemisphere was filling with blood.
Oh, wow.
So it's a wonderful book.
That's great. Well, thank you both very much. You've been listening to Your Health. I'm with Barbara Bate and Kat Erskine, and we've been talking about NAMI and mental health issues. Thank you both for coming.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.